This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the only podcast that talks in detail about your favorite Formula One fan fictions and what you would do to your favorite drivers in a log cabin. My name is Luke, and I'm joined as always by my partner in crime, Tim. Tim, how are you doing? Well put. Dylan is also on the show today.
Hey, all right. If you're listening to this right now, okay, I need you to take your shirt off and I need you to swing that around. I need you to develop a sock fetish because it was a fantastic weekend of racing.
It really was, man. I don't know about a sock fetish, but I just developed I got a little aroused from some of the races going on this weekend. And I know the Formula One fans are going, oh, what racing? What was happening this weekend?
Yeah, this schedule break is stupid.
This is like IndyCar-esque. Here's the thing is like we always get on IndyCar for like that month where it just takes off between Texas and St. Pete. And it really feels like Formula One said, that looks like a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even look at the schedule ahead of time, like the entire season schedule. So whenever this happened, I didn't take it well.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is F1 technically has they technically say that this last weekend, or maybe it's this upcoming weekend, was supposed to be the weekend for China. But like we kind of know that China wasn't gonna happen. We've known right. China wasn't gonna happen for like three straight years, and dare I say it's not gonna happen next year too. So I wonder why you didn't book. But you have no race the week before. You have no race the week after. So why would you not go, you know, knock, knock, knock. Hey, I don't know, Nürburgring, which is its own fiasco. And go, all right, you want the week after China, week after China, wink, wink. Because we just need any race in that span. And there's no guarantee that China's right. going to happen.
But at least the payoff is Baku, which hasn't really been the crazy well-done Baku. I mean, last year was just a really tame race, right? Nothing too crazy. So I don't know. Maybe we'll get a well-done Baku race, or maybe we'll get just a street course race.
I think Baku is going to be very telling in that, like, if it's crazy, maybe there's some hope for the season. But if it's just another Red Bull shellacking, if Baku can't give us chaos, what can?
Yeah.
Outside of Australia. I mean, I guess Australia gave us some, but.
Part of what's made this break kind of bearable is that this season hasn't been that great. Yeah. And it's pretty predictable about who's going to win. And the grid is kind of filing out where they're going to kind of be. And there hasn't been a ton of like chaos. And I'm not talking just like crashes and stuff, but just like, you know, it's been a very predictable season so far. And so this gap hasn't been that bad because IndyCar has been insane and has really helped lessen that blow.
Yes. How about Kyle Kirkwood getting his maiden Formula or maiden IndyCar victory in the Long Beach Grand Prix? I'm telling you, man. All right. One, kind of like Kyle Kirkwood. All right. I kind of like that drive from him. Two, how about getting your first win in Long Beach? Joins a list of great drivers to have done that, and also just a legendary track, right?
Yeah, I saw on Reddit someone was like, yeah, Long Beach is kind of like America's Monaco. And then someone's like, yeah, except for the fact that it's a good track.
Right. It's our version of like, okay, this is a good street circuit.
Yeah, it's not as like, I don't know, flashy, but also, dude, it's affordable. Like Monaco is really expensive, but Long Beach is one of the best values in racing. The tickets are, I think I spent like $120 last year, and that was for the whole weekend. And for IMSA, IndyCar, the Stadium Super Trucks, the Vintage Indy, Vintage IMSA, like insane.
Yeah, that's great value. And honestly, too, like, I don't know, it just seems more about the cars and less about the party. Although, I assume Long Beach still has some party.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. But there's the car culture there is insane. I mean, you see tons of supercars parked all over the place, and there's like a whole auto show expo. Like there's an expo center there, and there's like it's basically an auto show, and you see all the manufacturers' new cars and technology and everything. And you also see like the Porsche Carrera Cup pits are inside the expo center.
Oh, that's sick.
And so in between like race one and race two, Derek and I were walking around through there, and those cars are just beat to shit because those guys, half the field's just like a bunch of rich doctors and stuff.
Yeah.
And so they just beat the shit out of those cars. It's incredible.
I would love to go in one of these coming years. I don't think I'll be able to next year, but it's on my to-do list. All right. Like I only got so much money, Dylan, you know?
Yeah, it's worth it though.
I have no doubt. I have to say though, this year's Long Beach Grand Prix, it was great, but it disappointed me just a little bit because I was thinking that maybe Romain Grosjean would chase down Kyle Kirkwood. He didn't. Yeah. Kyle Kirkwood kind of fended him off. And I think Roman he ran out of tires and fuel.
Yep. He was concerned there. He couldn't use his push to pass.
Which is why I kind of don't hate him as an outside dark horse for a championship this year. He's going to have to get his first win first, but that was a very smart and conservative drive.
But also it's because he had to have that. Like he wrecked in the first two races and he would have had at least a top five in the first two. He could have been almost leading the point. He would have been leading the points, I think, coming out of this round, had he just stayed where he was positioned in the first two races of the season instead of pushing it and crashing out. Like, he would be the championship leader right now.
This is fair. He's currently ranked number 7 with 71 points. You add a top 5, so put him at 90. I don't know. Top 5 would probably be about 91 points.
He would have been second in the first race, and I think fourth or so.
Oh, yeah. He would have taken it. I'll say this, by the way, looking at the standings, I like Marcus Ericsson. I have no disrespect towards Marcus Ericsson. I think his drive last year at the Indy 500 was phenomenal, and I don't hate seeing him succeed. I don't think he holds on to P1 of the standings much longer, though.
No, my pick, I think, is Scott McLaughlin.
Yeah.
Last year, the improvement that he showed, and then going into this year, I think he'll start to hit his stride, and he'll be really good. He was solid at Long Beach. I mean, Penske was good as a whole, but not super good. And I mean, this track is Andretti's best track, so it was kind of assumed that they would be really good. What surprised me though was that with Kirkwood starting on the pole, I was like, oh, this is going to be Ferrari-esque and how they're going to blow it. Like, they somehow always manage to screw something up, but everything was perfect. The strategy was good. I mean, like the call to come in after Newgarden, I think they overcut, right?
And yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he ended up somehow, they had a fantastic pit stop and the overcut, and like it all worked out perfectly. And then he was able to hold off Grosjean. It was crazy.
I thought that this was I was impressed by Kirkwood. I agree that I think McLaughlin will turn around, but I don't think McLaughlin, because you talked about Andretti, you talked about this as a strong track. I think the team to beat this year is going to end up being Aero McLaren. I think Aero McLaren produces the champion. I think Pato O'Ward is going to be your champion, because you look at the poise that he has seemingly week in and week out, and I feel like McLaren, in a way that's really only matched by Penske, is just firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, I think they're good, but I mean, Pato was a wrecking ball this past weekend. He took out Dixon and then took out himself.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Here's
a fun thing.
If
he doesn't take himself out of that, where does he finish? Top 10?
Yeah, he would have been. He would have left with the points lead. I think he lost the lead, right?
I think he did. Yeah. Well, yes, it's Ericsson won, Award too. So Award would have had to make up 15 points. And I think he probably would have been able to do that.
What was also disappointing was Rossi's last lap suspension failure.
I wanted to bring that up. Like, we were texting, and I'm like, see, this man is cursed. And you said, I think he's seeing ghosts. And it was actually just, I don't want to say normal suspension failure, but like, it's just, your heart breaks for him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, they were running good. I mean, McLaren as a whole was doing great. And
I think he was
yeah.
P10, so that would have been another 20 points. Yeah, instead, he lost about 12 points or thereabouts doing the rough math, so he would have been up. I think it's fair to say he would have been up in about 11th instead of 15th in the standings. By the way, I did my math wrong. I mentally added Formula One points, but no, if Roman Grosjean finishes, he would easily have the championship.
Yeah.
Lead. Like, there's no way. I thought it was a very solid race, and my big disappointment was that I didn't see the IMSA race before it, and I know that's just tragic. Dylan.
Dude, okay, if you're not watching IMSA, you need to be watching IMSA. It is sports car racing as a whole is really good, and WEC is phenomenal as well. But if you're in the United States, it's a little bit harder to catch a WEC race. But IMSA, it's readily available on Peacock. I think they occasionally stream it onto NBC Sports. But I mean, you can watch everything on Peacock, you can watch it on replay. But yeah, the story of the weekend with IMSA was the GTD cars. Not the GTD cars, the GTP cars.
GTP cars, okay.
Yeah, it gets confusing because they just swapped everything around. But yeah, the GTP cars were duking out. Okay, in the first corner, right, Sebastian Bourdais, he gets a little too hard on the brakes, wrecks. Very first corner, which at Long Beach is a really hard first corner. It's one of the hardest in racing, especially on cold tires, because you go from a really long straight on cold tires, you have a hairpin that then goes into the fountain turn. So it gets really, really narrow. And he just kind of braked a little bit too late and locked up. And he had a lot of rear bias, I guess, because the rear end just completely stepped out, smacked the inside wall, came back across, somehow missed everybody. And yeah, they were out. But the lead basically swapped back and forth with Wayne Taylor Racing and the Penske Porsches. And there was a lot of tire strategy. And towards the end of the race, the Porsches got the lead because they undercut. So they got out there onto a clean track. And then Wayne Taylor had a really bad pit stop. And so the two Porsches were in front. Porsche 1 had fresher tires. The Porsche in second place had really, really old tires. Mm-hmm. And they were able to hold off the Wayne Taylor car just long enough to where they only had one lap to duke it out for the lead, right? So had that second Porsche not held them off, they probably would have come together, you know, early enough to where the Wayne Taylor car could have kind of picked his spots and eventually won. But it was a last lap maneuver. And yeah, going into turn one, Ricky Taylor cooked it a little too hard and went straight into the tires as he was making a pass for the lead for the win on the Porsche Penske. And so Penske ended up getting their very first win in IMSA. Just a glorious race. It had strategy, it had great battles, and then just a Hail Mary move. And he had enough speed that he didn't really have to do that, but I mean, late in the race, you get out of line a little bit. I think he got the tires a little bit dirty and just underestimated it.
I think this is the first IMSA race that I didn't get to watch, which is funny because it's the shortest one thus far.
Yeah.
Go watch sports car racing. If you're like jonesing for racing right now, man. Like, go expand your horizons.
Even the Porsche Carrera Cup is insane. And that's also on Peacock. You can watch all the replays and everything. Almost every weekend that IMSA races, the Carrera Cup follows. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And dude, those races are crazy. They beat the shit out of those cars. It's a spec series. And half the field is like pro level kind of drivers. And then half the field is just like doctors and lawyers. So it's crazy.
Just, yeah, we'll be able to go. And then, yeah, just spec series too, so you'll see him go like four wide, just like it's just casually nothing down the front straight.
Yeah, it's not as crazy as the MX-5.
The MX-5 Cup is the one that's just like,
yeah, that's the best.
The hell am I watching? It's funny too, because the MX-5 Cup too is like anytime you see it, you're about to see like much faster cars on the same course. So like watching the MX-5 Cup is almost like watching chaos in slow motion.
Yeah, especially at Daytona. That's usually the best race of the weekend because they always finish like three and four wide.
Yeah. Great. Three and four wide, and you're about to, and like that track does not portray speed well in the sense of it's so large that unless you're right by the cars, it's hard to tell how fast they're going.
Right.
So like when you just put an average MX-5 plugging along at like 135, 140, and you're about to watch, you know, every other car you've seen go down the front stretch is doing 200 plus. Like you're like this seems like they're just doing like freaking highway speeds. It's all they're just fighting for their lives. So as we swap to the news, this was something I wanted to hit on. Was that Red Bull thinks that half the F1 field might be a little cheaty when it comes to the error, when it comes to the budget regulations.
Yeah. I have conflicted thoughts on this because I kind of equate it to professional fighting and steroid use. So especially when you look at UFC, likely all of those fighters are on PEDs, right? But they're being very secretive about it. They're not reaching their full potential because you can't just go all out. You have to be very particular with your cycles and everything. Most likely, most of those guys are on gear, right? They're taking substances. And so it's assumed that everyone's probably taking it. So part of me wants to say, hey, let's just legalize whatever and see what kind of freak athletes we can get. You know, mm-hmm. How hard can you knock someone out? How crazy, you know, how you can go five rounds just full pace with this on EPO.
You guys didn't care about your heads anyway, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of also like PEDs are probably pretty prevalent in baseball, right? And like the PED era was one of the best. It saved baseball. I mean, so when it comes to F1, I assume most of the teams are probably cheating the budget cap in very creative ways, right? F1 is based partially on money laundering, right? Like half the sponsors in the field are just money laundering schemes and stuff.
Yeah.
So
rich
I
energy.
Don't know. It doesn't really bother me that like teams are cheating the budget cap because I assume it's probably happening. I don't know.
On the other hand, I'll play devil's advocate and say that it does bother me because you bring up like, you know, just let it rip, see what can happen. That's the entire previous history of Formula One. And the entire reason that we have a budget cap is because it led to some boring as shit years of sustained dominance because it was really more about the sport became trying to find sponsors and not race.
When they lost the nicotine sponsorships, the cigarette or tobacco sponsorships, right? That's whenever I agree. I do think there should be budget caps, but it doesn't bother me that teams are kind of being creative to beat it because you're not going to be able to go all out the way you used to, right? You still have to be kind of
somewhat secretive. Sneaky.
In a perfect world, nobody would do it, but I know they're all going to do it. So it's like, I don't know, whatever.
Here's what I don't understand is people compare it to like a North American like salary cap sport, right? I don't know the last time that a team has gotten punished for major cap circumvention.
Yeah, that's true.
Like I know there have been some cases of like cap circumvention, and when like a minor thing comes down, like teams get effed in it. Actually, you know what? The Arizona Coyotes, they didn't do cap circumvention. But I'm Googling it now. dude, it's ridiculous. So the Arizona Coyotes, it violated the combine policy. Basically, they allowed a guy to work out for them under the table, real sneakily, like. And the NHL said that you can't have a first round pick next year and a second round pick this year, which for an NHL team that is in the turlet, that would be like looking at like Williams and saying, hi, you don't get to do any wind tunnel regulations, like absolutely none of it for 2 years. Like that's, yeah, like
that's rough.
That's a rough thing. What I don't get is why is it this hard to police? Like, I don't doubt there's a little bit of gray area in like the NFL, but I can't name a major cap scandal over a salary cap scandal over the last decade plus in North American sports, and we have all been like, okay, cool.
I think excellent. It's because it's a club and we're not in it, right? And I feel like it's a bunch of rich business owners that are kind of in cahoots with one another. I don't know. I feel like when it comes to money related things, they're not going to go after each other too much because you don't want to upset billionaires.
Joe's
going to be that way.
Joe Smith, the first overall pick in 1995, was the NBA's biggest one.
Yeah, nobody, like, when it comes to money, it's never the issue.
Yeah, like, and there are ways that you can, like, spread out money and, like, secretly, like, come in, you know, just under the cap, but everyone knows those rules, so everyone's kind of, like, playing at the same field. I don't know why it's so hard to verify that. I would say, too, you mentioned that it's, like, all in the money, you know? I think, too, part of the reason is that the NHL and the NFL and the MLB and the NBA, to an extent, all to various extents, they will royally F you over. They're not afraid to just give you, you know, a punishment that so severely outweighs the crime that it does not pay, right? Mm-hmm. Because if I'm a Formula One team, or if I'm any sports team, really, it's a cost-benefit analysis of what is the gain of cheating? What's the chance that I will get that gain? What's the punishment? What's the chance that I get punished? And does the punishment, how do the two compare? Which is the, you know, does the gain outweigh the cheating? And I think that for the most part, a lot of the North American sports, with the exception of the MLB's Astros scandal, but the MLB has a whole issue on its hands with that. They've done well enough to be like, oh, what's that? You secretly like took a guy to a weight room before he was like yours. Here's 2 years. You basically can't do jack shit.
Death sentence.
It doesn't, the benefits don't outweigh the cons, if you will.
Right.
I think that's kind of where we're at, though.
One thing that I think is going to be hilarious is if McLaren comes in over the cap, and Zach Brown talked all that shit, right? Horner is going to have a lot to say if McLaren comes in over the cap. And I really like McLaren. It's probably my favorite team, but that would be kind of funny. he would talk a lot of shit back.
That would be hilarious. I would love to see that. I would also love to see like Haas or Williams come out as over the budget cap.
Yeah.
Just be like, did you legitimately spend this on catering? Because you realize Red Bull or whoever is just going to label it catering, right? Like, did you legitimately spend this on catering? You realize you're not supposed to do that.
It'd be like an episode of My 600 Pound Life where they like, they've claimed that they've only eaten like, I don't know, 1,000 calories a day, but they've gained weight, and the doctor's always like, where is this coming from? Like, every single episode is basically the same, right? They claim that they've been eating this certain diet and only eating these foods, but they end up gaining weight after they see the, what is it, Dr. Now, is that his name?
Dr. Now, he's like, oh man, what was the clip I saw today where he's like, you've already eaten the next 4 years worth of foods ahead of time.
dude, that guy is shiesty.
But no, that'd be so funny. I also like, I don't know. I feel like people are already writing off the budget cap. They're like, it never works, blah, blah, blah. It's just it's a dud. It's a failure. And like, I don't know. It seems like Aston Martin is a pretty large testament to it working. Do you think Aston Martin would catch up to an unrestricted Mercedes or Ferrari?
Only if Lawrence Stroll started to develop a complex about not having a fast team and decided to put his entire empire to work.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, there's not a chance.
Not a chance. Also, I mean, the field is notably tighter this year. Granted, 1-3 is larger than last year, but like, I don't know, 3-20 is pretty tight, and the midfield is really ratcheted up. The bottom,
I think, it's better than it's been in the vast history of Formula One.
Right. You don't have your Williams, 2019 Williams team right now.
Right.
And like, I don't know. To me, I'm just like, I don't know how you could call the budget cap a complete failure. One, when we're 2 years into it.
Yeah. I do like the budget cap, and I think it should be enforced. I don't think it should go like full steroid scandal kind of wide open, but I think it's working, and there's going to be teams kind of messing around in the gray area, but I don't think they can just go all out. Like, they're going to have to be very, very creative with it.
I just hope that whatever, like, my hope is that whatever the rules that they're playing with are properly enforced, which I know is way too much to ask for. Just let everybody play by the books, make the books, let them play by the books.
Or start punishing people for going over it. Like, actually punishing people.
Actually
then,
punishment.
Then they're going to stop.
Yeah. I should probably stop reading Twitter, but I've seen people say like Red Bull got overly punished. They were like 0.4% over the cap and they got 10% of their wind tunnel time taken care of. And I'm like, yeah, that's, I mean, percentage wise more, but also, you know, what would have ensured that no team like ever goes a cent over the GD cap again is if you just came in and you're like, nope, you're going to get royally fucked. Here's 75% of your wind time, tunnel time. Right. Absolutely gone. And anyone of you guys want to come in 1 cent, 2 cents over the cap? No, didn't think so. And you flip them off on your way out.
That'd do it.
I'd be too much of a cowboy for Formula One, apparently, despite living in the freaking frozen North Pole.
But F1 is all about money. And if you screw a team over too much, then sponsors are going to get upset. And at the end of the day, money is all that matters to F1.
Yeah, you're right. It's run by those Americans, you know, they're all about money.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We will be back with the formation lap in just a couple minutes.
The formation lap. The formation lap.
We are back. And for the IndyCar fans who thought that we were done talking about IndyCar, we're not. We're actually pretty excited. I know Dylan and I are always excited to go to the 500. And a Racer article came out that finally, dude, I was trying to postpone starting this, but I originally just said F it because it's Tornado Awareness Week, despite us having like an actual blizzard happening out here. So I was trying to outrun the tornado siren, but hopefully y'all didn't hear that. Anyway, the Indy 500, teams are going to have a little bit of new aero choices to make. Now, previously, the back end of the UAK 18 bodywork, which is the bodywork that IndyCar uses starting in 2018 on their DW12 chassis, they can only allow up to 2 degrees of positive inclination, right? Which, I mean, if you go see an IndyCar on an oval in person, you will notice, I mean, Dylan, you can back me up here, they're flat as hell. It's a
tiny wing and it's pretty much flat.
It's pretty much flat. Alexander Rossi actually suggested to Dallara to change basically the pillar of the wing as in a way that can actually increase angles to 9 degrees. And IndyCar stepped in and said, we're going to allow up to 5 degrees of change this Indy 500 period, which will lead to higher downforce, lower turbulence is the hope. The hope is better passing and will decrease the reliance on the gurney flaps, which I think is like it's a testament to, I think this year is going to be an absolute banger of an Indy 500.
Yeah, and I think they have a couple different aero options, even like on the side pods and everything. Mm-hmm. It's all just meant to reduce turbulence and allow the trailing cars to have more downforce, which is great whenever you're coming up through the pack. And I think what we saw in Texas, which Texas historically has not been great, but it was phenomenal this past year, really the past 2 years, but they debuted some of the aero changes that they're going to be doing at the 500 at Texas, and they worked really, really well. And yeah, they made Texas great. And what I liked about it is that cars were able to really kind of pack up together, but it wasn't a complete pack racing that you had with the pre-2018 body updates. And the pack racing was a little bit too chaotic. And
it was equal parts incredible and also just, this can't go on too much longer,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. And like at the 500, so immediately whenever they went to the new body work, it became a little bit too hard to pass. And every year since then, it's slowly been ticking to the point where it's like, yeah, it's very possible to pass. You have to kind of set it up, but you can definitely pass. And I think with this latest round of updates, this 500 is going to be wild. This is going to be great.
I agree. So they have the ability to apply, it's about 250 additional pounds of downforce. And like you said, not only is it going to increase passing, I think too, what I'm excited for is it increases the ability of cars to kind of pick their own strategy, to tweak their car in a way. It's a wider range of what you can do with your car that over doubles the previous amount, right? In terms of wing angle. And that means that you can just adjust your wing as you go, as suits your style right now. And you can just really min-max for those positional gains, for those defensive gains.
What I think it's going to show, though, is that this year qualifying is going to mean absolutely nothing, because for qualifying, they trim the car out for absolute speed. And that's why you see such dramatic fall off on the tires within the three laps. So it's a three lap average that they do for the Indy 500 qualifying. And like the first and the third lap are dramatically different in speed because they're so trimmed out. I mean, it just chews through the tires, but you're going to have cars that are really, really fast in qualifying trim, and they're going to end up towards the front of the pack. But you might have cars that are really, really good in the field and in the actual race that are not going to qualify quite as good. And that means you're going to have people coming and going, which is always awesome in racing. Yeah.
And for the record too, they haven't cranked up the cars yet. And you're looking at 227.68 mile per hour average. I agree. I think that I almost think pole position meant a little too much between the pack racing and the Universal Aero Kit of 2018. You know,
yeah,
or the UAK18 is what it's called, but the Universal Aero Kit. Like I said, I almost think pole position meant too much, because I like the fact that the Indy 500 kind of just makes its own winner, and it never really went away, but it did feel like it got too hard in 2018. Yeah. I am very excited for the qualifying. You'll notice, dude, like you said, that's why the fall off is so hard, because they trim it for absolute speed. They also trim it, like we're talking like 0 to 5 degrees. We're talking 0 degrees of wing angle that they will use sometime, yeah, like 0.05 degrees of wing angle. It's what makes those cars statistically more crashy on their Indy 500 like qualifying laps than during the 500 itself, despite there being that many more cars, is just like, hi, you're gonna have as little steering as possible.
Yeah, and the times are so close that you have to send it. Like, you can't just say, oh, I'm gonna be conservative and we'll get wherever we get. Like, you're gonna be towards the back if you do that. Like, you have to send it no matter what your strategy is.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of indie testing, that's a great way to bring up Joseph Newgarden, 227. Scott Dixon, Connor Daly, 227.46. That is numero dos of the day. I loved Connor Dixon. I don't know how you cannot love Connor Dixon. If Connor Dixon could have a nice Indy 500, I'd be a very
happy. Dixon. Connor Daly.
Holy shit. I read Connor Daly and then Scott Dixon right below that. My God.
That's a mythical driver.
Yeah, Connor Dixon. All the fun of Connor Daly with all of the skill of Scott Dixon.
Yeah. Perfection. Perfetto.
That is like the second coming of Ayrton Senna himself. Like, anyway, I love Connor Daly. Connor Daly would be great if you could have a nice Indy 500. Third place, Scott Dixon with a 226.78. And Kyle Kirkwood at number four with 226.7. And the Takuma Sato rounds up top five at 226. Of course, Takuma finds himself in, you know, a top five test at the Indy 500. I am very excited about that. Takuma Sato, don't sell him short. I just, speaking of, let's talk about other young guns. Callum Ilott.
Ah, yeah. Bit of, internet hate.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And it wasn't that egregious. He just got sent out on cold tires and held up the pack a little bit, right? That's what it was all about.
That basically, yeah, the opening laps, I think he took out Agustin Campesino too. So
I don't get it.
It's death threats out the altitude. Stop making death threats to the freaking, to like drivers, dude. I don't know what else to say except for, like, I shouldn't have to say this, you know?
Yeah, it's easy not to do it.
You know, it's so easy not to do it.
God. You just don't.
Just choose not to. Yeah,
it's free.
It's a safe and legal thrill.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like throwing your used car batteries into the ocean.
So he put Elio Castroneves right on the heels of Agustin Campino, which led to Agustin and Elio coming together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
Still, it happens, you know?
If you don't like your favorite driver going out of the race, find a different sport.
Yeah. It happens, you know? It's like you can be critical, but you don't have to like threaten to kill him.
Right.
You can say, hey, I think you should have chilled out a little bit in that corner. Yeah. Instead of you're going to die.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So Callum Ilott, he's going to over to the beach until he has to show up in Alabama. So
yeah, that sucks. Just going to Alabama.
I think Barber is the only acceptable place in Alabama, to be honest with you.
It is. It's a little island of, but at least it's not Mississippi, you know?
Thank God for Mississippi.
Anyone that's listening to this has never been there. If you want to know what it's like to go to Mississippi, go into your bathroom, pee in your bathtub, and then get in there with the pee. And that's what it's like to be in Mississippi.
Yeah, well, actually put on your water to maximum hotness and then pee in that bathtub. And notice how like the steam pee is surrounding you as you soak yourself. That's what the Mississippi summer is like.
Yeah. And no one has money.
No. All right. Personal story time. All right. One time we had to drive to our buddy Derek's wedding. I probably have told you this story. Me and my buddy Jordan, we decided to drive because I owned a Prius at the time and it was cheap. And we got there. And I swear to you, you know, I've been all over the globe, haven't had the privilege to go to Asia yet. But the most I've ever had culture shock was right on the border between Alabama and Florida, right on the panhandle. It's very Mississippi-esque. I was just like, this is a place.
Yeah, it's like third world.
People live here, man.
Like, even whenever we drove from Pensacola to Daytona Beach,
yeah,
like you kind of you go along the panhandle and then you like cut right through Central Florida. It's wild. Like when you get into the central area, oh
yeah. Yeah, that's that is like it doesn't even feel like the United States. Like I've been to Iceland, and I remember standing in Iceland being like, this feels more like the United States than like the center of Florida.
Yeah.
Because yep. I didn't hurt that I was standing in line for a subway, but Canada, all of Canada is more like the U.S. than southern Mississippi is.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the U.S.
That's an outlier. We're going to end up getting death threats over this. We should probably stop.
They don't have the internet in Mississippi.
If they could read, they would be very upset.
So next week.
Speaking of that, NASCAR's at Talladega this weekend. I think that's really the only racing going on. So I guess if that's your thing, tune in. So, it's going to be a stupid race. Super speedways are dumb.
So I guess that it's only appropriate that I say, show us your butthole and let's roll, baby.
Raise hail.
Praise Dale.